We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode number 15 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And guess what, Keisha? I have a quote to start us off today. And I'm not going to tell you who the author is because I want to keep our listeners guessing about it. And trust me, it's a good one. It will come full circle at the end. If you are lucky enough to be different, don't ever change. So let's think about that as we learn about our incredibly lucky opportunity to have another fierce advocate join us today. And the first time I met this guest, Dr. Jackie Jodl, I was absolutely mesmerized. I was mesmerized by her intelligence, her accomplishments, and most importantly, her grace. And so let's learn some more about some official details about Jackie. So Jackie Jodl is the Senior Vice President of Global Youth and Education at the Special Olympics. And prior to joining the Special Olympics, Jackie was an Associate Professor at the University of Virginia, focusing on education innovation, ed tech, and race in education. Most recently, Jackie was the Executive Director of the Aspen Institute, where she oversaw one of the Institute's most critical endeavors in education. Her early career began at Unilever in marketing management. Jackie is passionate about working on behalf of underserved children. This I can definitely testify to. And of course, young people. And she is thrilled to be given the gift of working to build the Special Olympics as a global thought leader for inclusive education.
Oh my gosh, we are so lucky to have you. You are a hero in education for sure. And your footprint is all over the field of education. And I'm just so honored that you're here with us.
Thank you so much for having me, both of you. I'm really excited to be here with the two of you and just so much respect for what the two of you have done and what you're doing now.
Well, we couldn't do it if you hadn't have done such a great job being such a great shero, because that's what this whole podcast is about, is lifting up people like you who have really overcome a lot in their careers to create just this massive impact in our field of education, which many people don't realize has been male dominated for like the first, you know, several centuries. So each week we explore models of leadership together. And we do this by focusing on what we call a pattern of M, mentors, mirror, model. You're going to hear all of these questions that start with an M. And we're going to hear your amazing responses, and our audience is going to learn so much about you as we go through this journey.
And Keisha, don't forget, we also have to remind ourselves to catch any edge of babble around language or organizations to ensure that our listening community connects with what's being said. And I certainly caught one while I was introducing Dr. Jodl. And so, Dr. Jodl, can you get us into that space of understanding a little bit more about what is the Aspen Institute? I know it's an incredibly important organization that's impacted you deeply.
Yes, well, the Aspen Institute is an incredible organization. Most of us hear about the Aspen Institute in terms of the Aspen Idea Festival, which is a huge summer event. It is really a flagship event for the Aspen Institute. And it is, well, it's an important event. It only represents a small or medium part of what the Aspen Institute does. It's an event in Aspen, and the Institute convenes thought leaders from across social, political, economic domains to come together and to really discuss pressing issues of the day in a nonpartisan, bipartisan environment, where the emphasis is really on opening oneself up to different points of view, focusing on evidence and research, and really attempting to be on the leading edge of finding solutions for those pressing issues. The other part of the Aspen Institute where I worked was really focused on policy programs. And I had the privilege of leading one of their really primary education endeavors. And that was really focused on creating a footprint, a roadmap for what we would refer to as whole child education, just moving beyond thinking about learning, not just in terms of standardized testing, but really thinking about human development, child development, adolescent development, and how that requires that we think about learning as involving not just those kind of academic elements, but also understanding the role that social and emotional development plays, and how they're all three of those endeavors, social, emotional, and academic, really operate together in the learning process. So I worked on that for 3 years. It was an incredible assignment. And the Institute really provided a forum for me to really take all of my passion and focus it and drive forward on that project.
Oh, and it was a great project. I refer to a ton of pieces that are distributed through Aspen, created and distributed through Aspen Institute. And, I mean, there's no better source in my mind's eye. So thank you for doing
that. Yeah, it ended up being terrific, actually. Yeah. The final reports ended up being part of the latest administration's education platform. So it's getting great play.
Yeah. Great. Well done. Thank you so much. And that's the kind of work that we're talking about, right? The footprint that you have left with that work is going to help a lot of districts come out of this pandemic as they begin to re-enter school and focus on the whole child needs, especially since they've been almost a year and several months out of school in their normal fashion. So, you know, it's probably yet to be seen.
Yeah, certainly we never would have predicted that social emotional development would be so critical. But, you know, as educators, you appreciate this. We're going to have to lead with that, with understanding that we have to meet children where they're at social emotionally in order to move forward out of this pandemic with their learning. Absolutely. And we're going to have to set aside, you know, the notion of, you know, what the test scores are right now, because they're rather meaningless in the current environment. So we're going to have to get children healthy from a social emotional perspective so that they can move into their academic learning the way we need them to.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started with our M's. So first M question is, who are your role models and why?
The way that I think about my role models really is in terms of, you know, women, but really those women who maintain their authenticity as leaders by really recognizing and retaining their unique perspective as a woman in a position of power. I remember that I was at this really great workshop at the University of Chicago. And it was in the Harris School of Public Policy. And they brought together a great group of aspiring female leaders and then brought in some great role models for us to have a chance to talk to. And one of the comments that was made by virtually every speaker, but really wasn't embraced by the workshop's facilitator, was, so what do we do in situations where you actually have women that are kind of the toughest mentors, the not the supportive mentors, that kind of forget the fact that we're all in this together as women and we need to be sisters. We need to be sisters in our pursuit of really bringing to positions of power our perspective as women. And it was quite interesting because without exception, every single female leader who came to speak to us referred back to a situation in their career where they were confronted by this situation where they felt that they were working for someone or with someone who didn't quite bring that perspective to their work. Or if they didn't fully appreciate that perspective. So this is where I really bring my probably a feminist perspective to my understanding of leadership, that we need to appreciate that there's something almost selfless or unconditional about the leadership, our leadership responsibilities, where I expect more from women as leaders than I do from men in similar situations. And what I expect is I expect this notion of really unconditionality and kind of selflessness in our leadership, where it's not just about us, it's about the broader community. And of course, in my mind, where I've decided to focus my attention is on children.
That expectation of sisterhood is so incredibly valuable. And I love that you underscored authenticity. It reminds me of a researcher that I just adore, Ellie Drago Severson. And she always shares that authenticity is the greatest form of self-knowing. So it really connects so deeply with who we are and who we want to become. You know, you have certainly been influenced by such incredible role models and have had amazing mentors. And so I'm curious to think about when you notice those high expectations in the sisterhood coming forward, who have some of your mentors been in this space?
So one of my most important mentors has been Linda Darling Hammond. And Linda Darling Hammond is president and CEO of the Learning Policy Institute. She's this incredible academic coming out of Stanford, also at Columbia. She graduated from Yale, first class to admit women, real thought leader in terms of African-American civil rights in the context of education reform. So she really is one of my most important mentors. What I love about Linda is she really brought her perspective as just being a teacher in the classroom to everything that she did. And what that meant in terms of her leadership style is she brought with her a sense of meeting everyone where they're at, not entertaining a whole lot of shenanigans, actually, really knowing how to look around the room and kind of a differentiated approach to bringing and people together and building consensus. So she also really overcame tremendous, structural barriers to her own achievement to become, if you look at the American Enterprise Institute, they list the top policy influencers across the country. And out of the 200 that they list, she's always number one. I mean, that is an amazing, amazing achievement. And so I've been fortunate. She's been a guide for me for a while.
She is incredible.
I also love the fact, if I can just, mention a few other women that have really touched me. I work for an organization now, the Special Olympics, and I love the fact that it was founded by a woman, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, a mother, a sister of, a powerful, male, male politicians, obviously, JFK and RFK and that whole family. But she just brought with her to the organization, and I just see it in the fabric of the organization that I'm with, such a commitment to the highest standard of work and passion, and just like no question about the fact that we really have to not make excuses about where we're at, and excuses about the types of work that we're doing. And so she's another one who I really look for leadership. And then, of course, the third person is, I have to mention Tim Shriver, because he is also one of my mentors. And so what really attracts me to his leadership style is his humility. And I strive every day in my own leadership to bring a sense of humility and a sense of understanding that the best way to lead often is from behind, and also I think the second best way to lead is by wrapping one's arms around the team and moving them all forward as one.
My goodness. And what a reflection on character to be part of organizations that support such incredible missions. And speaking of reflections, when did you look in the mirror and see a leader looking back at you?
Well, you know, it was so funny. You know, I love this question because when I look back, I realized that one of my first notions, you know, that self-awareness, that authenticity of being really self-aware of yourself as a leader, I was sitting in the what we called the commons of my high school, South St. Paul High School in Minnesota, a lovely working class town where I grew up. And I was sitting there and it was an awards ceremony for the gymnastics team. And I was co-captain of the gymnastics team. And my coach, who I didn't really think was like a huge fan, he introduced me and gave such a glowing recognition of my ability to serve as an important leader on the team that I was like, wow, I just didn't even understand that about myself. And that really touched me. And then I was at the University of Minnesota where I did my undergraduate work. And I was really involved in working with, student governance issues. And a couple of other students came up to me and approached me and they said, you know what? We want to know if you want to run for student body president. And if you do, we would like to, put together a campaign for you to do that. We've never had a female student body president at the University of Minnesota. It's a huge school, 50,000 schools, several different campuses. And if you're up for it, we're game for it. And it was almost like I looked behind me, like, really? You know, like this is, you know, and so that was an organizing event, that experience, and an absolute organizing event where I learned how to balance my leadership with my humility. And I learned how to walk into rooms where I was not going to be, the most popular person in the room. In fact, I was going to be attacked for some of my points of view. So that was really the point in time where I thought, okay, I have some skill here where I can actually get some stuff done and not focus on the talking, but figuring out, okay, this is the problem. Let's find a solution and let's all move forward together as a group.
You have definitely been what many call an ally, whether it's being a sister, a leader, a feminist. You help us understand important issues as a woman from our body, who we love, how we love, issues of identity. And as you think about those perspectives as a woman, how do you see women changing the world?
Well, it is such a different place today, right now, in terms of where we see women, you know, daily just driving our thought leadership in so many different ways. I mean, clearly, I know that in politics, if you look at the absolute numbers, you know, we're not in great shape. But we do see women really leading, you know, whether it's, you know, the Speaker of the House, whether, you know, the press secretary right now, which I love this story, you know, Jen Psaki, the press secretary, she actually taught my kids how to swim. And I had three rambunctious boys. I would not leave them alone with any babysitters because I was afraid I was going to come home and someone would not be, you know, still alive. She was the only person I would trust with those three boys. And here I see her on this, you know, TV screen every night managing the, you know, the White House press. So certainly I see women changing the world in politics, and I see them on both sides of the aisle. Changing the world. And I would like to see, this is where I'm not as hopeful as I thought I would be, because I expected women more so than anyone to kind of lead the type of bipartisan collaboration that should be going on. But I see that missing. But saying that, I still see them in positions of leadership. The other area is, you know, women in sports. You know, it's just women in sports are that the field of sports, you know, sports is a great field because it's the great equalizer, right? When you talk about sports, it's all about who's best, not about, you know, who's got the the different structural advantages to get ahead. So I also love that. And, I'm a huge fan of some of the female athletes that we see out there, you know, leading the world. And so that is, I think that those two areas, you know, I really love. I think it'll be interesting to see in tech, you know, where women are really underrepresented, but you've got a couple of women who are really, huge leaders in that area, try to really set the standard for more inclusion. So those are some of the ways.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that in tech too. And, you know, you mentioned Linda Darling Hammond, and I think of her as a female maverick. She certainly disturbed the education system or our field. And then the U.S. soccer, U.S. women's soccer. I mean, they like, listen, dudes.
Yeah, absolutely. How you can have that type of performance, right?
Yeah.
You know, the other area that's just so fun to talk about is the music industry.
Yeah.
And I love the Taylor Swift and Beyonce stories where they're like, this is my property. My music is my property and I'm going to control it. And more so than men, they have really led on artists' control of their own, property. So I, in this case, music. So I love watching them. And obviously they also bring so much authenticity to that leadership. They're unbelievably, female in all that they do in their art. So I think those two women in particular are doing so much great work for us in general.
You know, little known fact, in the music industry, artists get paid off of royalties. And a woman invented a software that keeps up with downloads of artist works so that they can receive royalties for the downloads, because she saw the injustice. She actually lives here in Nashville and she showed me what she was doing. And now, almost every artist uses it, but I thought, way to go. Cause there's so much that they don't get because of the downloadable music now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
You know, across all of these domains, these arenas, what I really expect from women is I hope that we take some examples like the Taylor Swift or the Beyonce or some of the others. I think where women disagree on an issue, but what we need to do is demonstrate this ability to disagree civilly, to disagree with a focus on the truth, and to really focus on the outcomes. And, really, what are our goals here? Our goals are to, make the world in, the broadest sense of a better place. So fundamental to that is a world that is more accepting and empathetic and inclusive. So that's where I hope on a lot of these issues that we see being discussed, that women can really lead in being exemplars on how to address these tough issues of the day and to build consensus and to move us forward. Men aren't going to do it. I just don't. They're just not going to do it. They created the system, and for better or for worse, the norms within that system. But I have real high expectations for female leaders, for women leaders, to being able to change those norms and to focus on really changing what we've seen in the last several years in terms of the divisiveness that's characterized and to some extent been cemented in some of our key institutions.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for lifting up those examples of maverick moments. I think those are examples that each and every audience member can definitely connect to. And I didn't know, Jackie, that you were what some call a Swiftie, a big Taylor Swift fan.
I love her as a businesswoman. I'm not so very knowledgeable about her art, but I love her as a businesswoman. Lots of fun.
Well, they say, speaking of art, that her greatest talent is to experience feelings in very precise and poetic ways. Something that you have done really in your leadership work, you've been incredibly precise. And then as we've listened to your words today, I think you're incredibly poetic as well. You've done so much leadership work in this space of us understanding our feelings and that social emotional learning. You produced and supported the Nation at Hope Report, which is just, you know, I think just such an incredible point of reference that has been accelerated in this pandemic environment. We knew it was important before this, and now the acceleration of it is perhaps 20-fold or greater. And so it's just been such a remarkable, remarkable resource around energy and ways of thinking about the whole child and SEL. And so as you think about this SEL space, like to transition a little bit and ask, you know, how do you take care of yourself? What's the Jackie Jodl SEL? How do you make sure that you're Beyonce fierce at the same time as well?
Yeah. So from the broadest sense of taking care of oneself, I go back to this great Barbara Walters interview when she was interviewing a number of famous women, including Oprah and Katharine Graham from the Wall Street or from the Washington Post. And one of the questions was, you know, can women have it all? And the answer that I like the best that almost every woman gave was, yeah, of course we can have it all, but there's an important caveat. We just can't have it at the same time. So that answer really resonated with me. And so I chose to kind of balance my work and family responsibilities by, shifting the work to the side for several years while I focused on my kids. Now that's a huge luxury, and which is important to remember. But one of the things that I see now is a huge shift. So I'm working in an environment where there's so much more flexibility, and in part driven by what we are, you know, with this virtual world that we're working in, where women can ideally, if we start to really support childcare in the way that we should, can really start to better balance their careers throughout their responsibilities as mothers. So that's the big broad answer. And then I think that there's the daily answer where, you know, it sounds really crazy, but I can tell you, as someone who knows a fair amount about the neuroscience of learning, that, you know, sleep and exercise are just so important. And the problem is that most of the, you know, let's talk about the teachers. I come from a family of teachers, and I have five sisters, and, you know, half of them are teachers. And, you know, that's the first thing that goes, is what goes is exercise and sleep for oneself. So to really make that not just a habit, but like a passion, a daily passion, I think is just essential.
Oh, you hit a nerve, Jackie.
Yeah, women are always the first to let those things go on behalf of their other responsibilities. And, you know, we just can't.
I know, I struggle with that every day. And I really appreciate your wisdom around raising children, because it shouldn't be a choice. You know, women.
No, it shouldn't be a choice.
Should be a choice. And, you know, thanks to women like yourself who kind of stand up for that. We had a guest last week who said the same thing. She said, you know, I put on my calendar that I'm breastfeeding. So if you want to set a meeting, get ready to see me with a pump bra on. Because that's how I'm presenting, you know. And I was like, go girl, because I mean, it has to change. We are now moving to the second half of our time together, and we have a little game that we like to play called Finish This Thought. We worked really hard on that title for that game.
That's the first.
Here's the first
finish
one.
The thought. Okay.
Finish the thought. Coming out next Friday, next Christmas. An event that changed my world view.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was at the University of Chicago, I was in business school, and it was the first time I was in an environment where I was really surrounded by many students of Advantage that came from really advantaged backgrounds. And I remember looking around my business school class, understanding that, wow, first of all, I'm one of a handful of first generation college graduates, and I was definitely not academically prepared for this group. I figured it out by the time I left, but it was a real steep learning curve. And then I certainly was one of the few that needed to work. And I remember thinking, this is not a fair system. You know, this is not a fair system. Someone's saying, aren't you going to the party tonight? And I said, no, actually I have to work. And they started to laugh. They said, oh, come on, Jackie. I'm like, no, seriously, I have to work. So that was my first, being really coming face to face with the fact that socioeconomic background really drives outcomes in education. Absolutely. It was the Coleman Report. Mm-hmm. It was the famous Coleman Report, really living that in my experience in my own education.
And Keisha, I have one of those exciting provocations from your Finish the Thought game as well. So Jackie, how about this one? I became a stronger person after.
So this was an educator, a neighbor who was a principal. And he stopped me once. And I think I was probably, 11, 12 years old. And he told me that I was smart, and he told me I was thoughtful and I should make sure that I made the most of it. And in retrospect, what he was doing is he saw that I came from a big family, and he saw that I had some academic potential, and he just took a little bit of time to give me a nudge in the right direction. And it made me think a little bit more deliberately about my schoolwork. And then I think he definitely took time, several times. I ended up starting to babysit his children, and he made sure that he kind of gave me some guidance along the way. And I was the first one in my family to go to college. And I think he had a big part of that. And then at the end of the day, across my five sisters and myself, we have the last time we counted, there were 13 or 14 degrees. I think there are a couple of PhDs and lots of masters and lots of educators. So he made me stronger. He made me stronger.
Oh, that's awesome. What about this one? My life improved when I...
So this is kind of it doesn't sound so politically correct, but my life improved so much when I was able to return to the workforce. Being at home was really, there's definitely rewards, but it was really hard because I just didn't have the type of balance that I think that I needed. And I felt that I was living, too much for my kids and not enough for a broader purpose in my life. So that was a real eye-opening moment for me when I thought, wow, I probably should have returned to the workforce earlier than I did.
You are owning your truth.
Yes, yes.
We don't apologize for owning our truth.
Yeah, well, it speaks to the balance, right? It speaks to the balance. And I give this, this is a fun conversation, but in the lean in conversation, that was an interesting conversation, but we needed to talk more about how women struggle to balance family life. And that I didn't think was as present in that conversation. And that conversation as it should have been, between Sheryl Sandberg and Anne-Marie Slaughter. I wish that they would have talked a little bit more about that.
Well, talk to us with this last one then, speaking of life. The sentence starter is this: a decision that changed your life.
Really, the decision that changed my life was when I decided, okay, I am going to really pursue higher education and just not really understanding, not thinking about myself in that way, but just getting so much feedback from my environment about, well, you know, where are you going to apply? Are you going to apply? You know, what are you thinking about doing next? And just thinking, okay, I am going to apply to some of the world's most prestigious institutions. And I think that I'm going to get beyond my imposter, crisis here and think that I really belong in those environments. And it opened up so many doors for me. I went, you know, off to the University of Chicago. I didn't even have any idea of what that was going to be like. And it was just such a shaping event for me. And then I later ended up at Columbia where I got my PhD. And along the way, I realized that I do belong here. And I didn't know that these doors even existed. But once I opened them, I was able to create in myself the type of skills that I needed to really go out in the world and help to make a difference.
Well, Jackie, you have clearly presented for us a wise, authentic, and let's just say whole person dialogue today. I know I have learned so much, not only in the past, but in the present, and I look forward to the future learning with you. And Keisha, I'm wondering, what have you learned from this conversation?
Well, I've learned that if there are two words that I would use to describe Jackie Jodl, it would be authenticity and intentionality. I don't think there's anything that you've done, at least that you've shared with me and that I know about you outside of this conversation, that hasn't had incredible intention in some form or fashion. Even exiting the workforce to take care of your children for a number of years. I mean, that was a tremendous decision that you made with great intentionality, and I'm sure their lives are the better for that. I really also appreciate your messaging around the power of an education, a degree. You know, there's a lot of us that are hearing, I don't think anyone has to get a degree to be employed or employable. But I do believe pursuing the path to a degree changes you and you evolve. And I think you exemplify that, and you also kind of, you spread that message, and I appreciate that so, so much. I think that you, you know, as I said at the beginning, the footprints that you've left on this planet in the field of education and, other are just incredible. Do you have any thoughts that you want to share with our audience?
Well, thank you both so much. It was such a generous summation of my perspective on just life and leadership. I think that one of the messages that I would like to, you know, really leave the listeners with is that education is such a gift. And the way I've always thought about education is really in terms of learning. And, you know, life is so short. And so to view yourself as a lifelong learner is just such a great way to leave, to really open yourself up to different perspectives. And so when I talk about the different degrees, I really come from a background and a family where, you know, my father did not have a college degree, but he was a lifelong learner and instilled that in all of us. And certainly I think that it created an environment where I was taught early on to have a real openness and a real acceptance of different points of views and be really super comfortable with difference as opposed to similarity. So I think that's why I love education is it's about learning, and it's about learning about different perspectives so that we can all go into the world and really learn to appreciate differences and those who bring their own authenticity to our interactions.
Well, our authentic listeners are definitely learning a lot and reflecting right now. And maybe they're even still wondering about that quote that I started with, which was, if you're lucky enough to be different, don't ever change. And by the way, in honor of Jackie's swiftiness, this was actually a quote from Taylor Swift, and it's connected to the Special Olympics, the organization that you work and care so deeply about. So see, it was completely full circle, everybody. And when we come to this conclusion, we also like to offer a coaching question so that we continue with that lifelong learning that Jackie talked about. And so today's coaching question is, what might be some things you would never change as you discover and know more about what makes you special? Again, what might be some things you would never change as you discover and know more about what makes you special?
Oh, that's a good question, Frances. And Jackie, we can't thank you enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of time out of your day with us, sharing your story and just imparting your wisdom on us and our listeners.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute honor. And I'm so happy that you both are pursuing this endeavor. It's just going to be great for all of us educators and all of us women.
Thank you so much. Again, to our fierce listeners and our fierce leader here, we hope that you continue to be inspired by Jackie's inspirational Shiro Beyonce. So continue to be fierce. And be healthy and take care of yourself. And as Sasha Fierce said, be happy with the beautiful things that make you, you. Thank you again for sharing you with us today. So Keisha, what should our listeners do next?
Let me tell you, Frances, I just got to say, I love being here with you every week because you always add those just little pieces of quotes. And I appreciate you being my partner in this. And we have other partners that are going to be joining us in our future podcasts, where we're going to highlight other sheroes in education, explore their M's, ask them our new game that will, again, be coming out at Christmas. So look for that. Please don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E, and answer that coaching question that Frances asked earlier. And until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.